Today I am joined with Juliet Mayers, who is the founder and CEO of Inspiration Zone, LLC, which actually is a strategic consulting practice specializing in diversity, equity, and inclusion, brand management, and thought leadership. We're taking a gorgeous walk on this day at the Norris Reservation in Norwell, where she is from. And she works with organizations to create diverse, equitable, and inclusive workplaces. And she's also the host, which you must hear, of her podcast. It's Entering the Inspiration Zone. I've listened to a lot of those episodes, and I love it. And she's a published author. She's working with Forbes on her third book, Strategic Networking 2.0, Harness the Power of Connection and Inclusion for Business Success. This book is due to be out March of 2023. So join me as we take a wonderful walk. It is awesome to be with you at this gorgeous place. We are in Norwell at the Norris Reservation. I don't know. I have an affinity for Norwell now because my daughter just moved here, but you said you've been here for 20 years.
Yes, yes. It's a beautiful town.
Yeah. And for you listeners, Juliet, I have, you know, you're an acquaintance, right? Through Connexion. I don't really know you, but what I admire about you is the work that you're doing. I mean, you know, you are leading Inspiration Zone. You run a podcast, and I just think the space you're in this thought leadership space and the DE&I space and strategy and brand is such an important space to be in right now, because every leader in every company is trying to figure it out.
Right. Yeah. I think it's exciting. I really enjoy my work, and as I say to people, I'm living the dream.
Yes, every podcast, I'm living the dream. I love that. So tell me, take us into your younger version of who you were and how you have become who you are now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm originally from the island of Barbados, West Indies.
Yum.
And you know, my childhood in Barbados, although it's a beautiful island, was, it was challenging for my family, you know, in terms of being, to be blunt about it, you know, we would have been classified as very, very poor, but we never saw ourselves or thought of ourselves that way. My mom was a very inspirational person, and one of our sayings was, you know, never let your circumstances define you. And quite honestly, I didn't really know what that meant until many, many years later. But Barbados really is what shaped me in terms of the values, in terms of her expectations of me and my sisters. And
like, what were they?
Well, she is funny. I write about it in my book, because she had these what I call really were her vision for us, right?
And I love it.
And so, one was to marry a good man.
Oh, and good man means what?
Right? Yeah. Well, I know for her,
yes,
it was someone who is respectable. Mm-hmm. You know, she had a very challenging life herself. And so I knew exactly what she meant by good in terms of having a good life and so forth. And her, another one was really, she wanted to have a nice home and to get a good education, because mm-hmm. she didn't have an education. She actually dropped out of school very early on to help with her siblings.
Wow.
So she had the equivalent of a fifth grade education, although you wouldn't know that from her.
Right?
She, you know, very, very bright woman in terms of very intuitive, very smart in terms of her approaches. But didn't have that formal education, you know. And her other one was to serve God. She was very a God-fearing woman, and so for her, in those circumstances, to be very clear about what her expectations were, really was very helpful, given that I was then able to internalize that thinking and the values and all of that. And that's why I say I'm living the dream, because, you know, everything that she expected and wanted came to fruition.
Wow.
And of course, relationships had a lot to do with that, which is, as you know, is a big part of what I talk about.
Yes.
In terms of my strategic networking.
Yes,
and stuff like that.
Yes, yes. And so is your mom still alive?
No, unfortunately, she passed away.
Oh.
Yeah. And, you know, it's been 19 years now, and but she's still, you know, I always say she's still with us in terms of her spirit and her legacy lives on. So,
right. So, yeah. So here you were growing up poor, but you didn't feel that way because your mom instilled a belief system in you.
Right.
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 And this is interesting because I also know that you had that neat feature in Forbes on mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
belief systems,
yes.
right?
Yes.
So, and I feel that, you know, especially in the DEI, I want to understand your perspective being in this DEI space and thought leadership space and having written your books. How do you support and what do you believe about belief systems and shifting those? Because you know that we are the cumulative of our life experiences and belief systems.
Absolutely, yeah. I think, how do I support? A lot of it is, one, helping people to increase their awareness mm-hmm. of themselves and also understanding others and really trying to develop healthy empathy for the lived experiences of other people.
Right.
Because I think it's very difficult for people to shift.
Beautiful day, huh? Yes, it's gorgeous.
It's very difficult for people to shift who they are unless they're very intentional about doing so, right? We're all shaped by our upbringing, what we are taught, what are we conditioned
right.
to believe, what we read, and all of that. And so it's a very intentional process, and one that I always encourage people to take the journey. It's not an easy journey, but mm-hmm. but it's really necessary to really truly live the values and to truly embrace diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Mm-hmm.
Because you
mm-hmm.
have to have that understanding of self, but also an appreciation for what other people are experiencing so that you can address their issues without judgment.
Right, right. Well, yeah, and the without judgment is the key, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So back to your kind of becoming, right? Mm-hmm. So you were starting with, you formed, you know, you had a good parenting. And what then transpired for you in your own becoming of who you feel you are today?
Well, I think, you know, it's funny, I use the statement, I feel like in many ways I was shaped by mm-hmm. A lot of the organizations I worked for helped mm-hmm. me to really sharpen what I really wanted to do and the person that I am. So early in my career, you know, fast forward, coming from Barbados and going to school in the U.S., and I went to work for very large companies. So, you know, my very first job was with GE Capital.
Jeez, right.
In the leadership program, which at the time was, you know, the program everybody aspired to be in. So I back then I quite honestly didn't necessarily even know the value of what the experience I was getting. But that said, the experience of being in very large corporate settings as a Black woman, often being the only one.
Yes.
I had to make a decision. You know, am I going to accept things the way they are and mm-hmm. go with the status quo, or am I going to try to be force for change?
Hi.
Hi.
Love it.
You know, and it was, I thought it was pretty easy, core to who I am. I just felt like, you know what, and there was a big saying, one of my managers used to say, if it's going to be, it's up to me, meaning, you know, if you want something to change, you have to change it.
Right.
Right, or be the change, sort of right. that philosophy
yes.
of, be
yes.
the change you want to see
in the world.
And so I embraced that. It wasn't an easy path, for sure. but I really embraced that. And I also realized that in a lot of circumstances, although I had my own challenges in a lot of the corporations that I call it grew up in, mm-hmm. I learned to understand that it was really about these structures, right? And a lot of it was really about the systems and power structures and all of that, and that I needed to find a safe space for myself. Mm-hmm. But it was also important for me to be an advocate for change. So every single organization that I worked for, mm-hmm. I did that.
Wow.
Right? Not because it was... wasn't a popular thing to do, for sure,
right?
But it was really trying to make the environment better for myself and the people that I knew who
were
experiencing.
Right. It was about you, but it was also about shifting, right?
Right.
So
right.
What was your... It feels to me, in talking to you, like you really were very grounded. Did you have to unpack any beliefs that didn't serve you?
You know, I, to be honest, I was very, and that's a very interesting way of putting it, because I think I absolutely was grounded, but I think a lot of that came from my upbringing and my mom. This whole sense of pride, you know, taking pride in who you are, not letting other people define you, mm-hmm. all of these things that were now as an adult and a lot
in
more experienced person.
Right.
Were pretty, you know, wise, right?
Yes.
And helped to shape my thinking and how I viewed myself. So I didn't see myself as a victim of any situation. I saw myself as, you know, quite honestly, I thought in most cases, even though I may have had challenges, other people did as well.
Yes.
And so it was never about me being good enough. It was, okay, what do I need to do to try to make things better?
Right.
And so if that's what grounded is, then
right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So now, in today's, because I think right now, I do experience that there is a lot of fear. There's a lot of fear. There is a lot of feeling of victimization going on, which comes from generations past mm-hmm. and current. How do you deal with that? Mm-hmm. Not you personally,
yeah.
but how
yeah.
do you deal yeah. with that when you see it?
Mm-hmm.
Because you've had life experience.
Yeah. 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 Well, first I want to address that what I meant by when I say I didn't feel like a victim, because I don't want to, I wouldn't want anyone to think I'm saying, well, people are behaving like victims or thinking of themselves as victims. Let me be clear. I
yes.
think that there are absolutely systemic
this is what I want to
problems,
name.
Right?
Yeah. Yes.
And quite frankly, still a lot of racism.
Exactly.
So I'll be very, very clear about it. And at the same time, I think it's important to not to give power to the forces. In my particular circumstance, not to give power
right.
to forces. So whether it's, I have this saying, assume positive intent, right? Which
mm-hmm.
is...
I see the same thing.
I know. Mm-hmm. I wasn't the originator of it, but mm-hmm. I totally buy into mm-hmm. that. Because whether or not the person intended it to be good or bad, it doesn't matter so much as how I interpret it.
Exactly.
And to not allow it to have power over me. So
right.
that's I wanted to sort of clarify that.
And, yes.
And so to go back to your question about, in terms of this whole notion of victim, people who may be feeling victimized or what have you, I do think that it's important to acknowledge what's happening.
I do too.
Right. So I think the first part is to acknowledge and try to build empathy, gain empathy for the experiences that people are having. They're not imagining it. It's real,
exactly.
right? It's real for them.
Exactly.
And so I think it's important as leaders to be on the lookout for that, whether or not the person, you know, internalizes it or what they do with it, to be on the lookout for the fact that there are still significant issues in organizations that have to be addressed,
mm-hmm.
and to try to gain an appreciation for it, try mm-hmm. to develop the empathy, but then also to do something about it,
right,
to make
right.
things better for.
Right, right. And so I'm totally with you, and don't you think it is, it's a two-prong. I mean, it's being able to name it and recognize it, and then to build the psychological safety.
Correct.
So that you can continue to create a new life experience for the system.
Right.
Whatever the system is, a family system,
right.
a company, a school, healthcare, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. And I would also say, and not to do it alone.
I know.
I think that it's very challenging, which is why, you know, the whole notion of tokenism is not talked about enough. But I think, you know, when you are the only one, it is very, very difficult to change the system,
address
what's happening systemically, particularly if people aren't attuned to what's happening in your environment. And so I often, when I coach leaders, will just encourage them to, it's not enough to go and find a diversity, fill in the blank, whatever you're looking for. Mm-hmm. It's important to make sure that you're building an organization that's diverse in every way.
I agree.
And not to isolate people in such a way that they are the only one or have to speak for their entire race or their entire whatever, whether it's LGBTQ or whatever the dimension of diversity is. Mm-hmm. Very important to not have that individual have to bear that burden.
Right, right. Well, because that in and of itself perpetuates exactly what we're looking to eliminate.
Exactly.
You know, in creating beloved inclusivity.
Right.
Right?
Exactly.
Jeez.
Exactly.
So in terms of you becoming and your having your own organization, which I know, you know, I've listened to some of your podcasts and you say, you know, you're not alone. You have support. You have your daughter with you, right?
Yes, yes.
I love that. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, my gosh. Yeah, that's fantastic. And it's really special to work, have her work with me. And it's very inspiring, quite honestly. And another area that I in addition to the work that I'm doing in terms of DEI and brand management and all of that, it's also about how do I inspire others in terms of helping them achieve their dreams and their goals. So Danielle is definitely a fabulous part of the Inspiration Zone team. And of course, I have a lot of other wonderful people who help me. I thought it was really important to point that out because, you know, the podcast that you're referencing, I think it's the goal setting one.
Yes,
and
yes.
And people often will say, oh my God, how do you do all of this? You're Forbes counsel and you're writing your third book and you're doing this and you're doing that. And it's like, yes, I am. But I'm not doing it all alone. I think this myth that of the superwoman doing it everything is quite damaging, quite frankly, to women in particular.
I agree.
And so I wanted to point that out, that I am a huge, huge encourager of people getting as much support for whatever it is that they're doing, both in terms of human resources, but also financial resources, and of course the network, which for me, that's my lifeblood of having a strong, vibrant network.
Right. Yeah. Talk about that a bit, because that's a big part of, that's one of your pillars.
Yeah.
You know, and I think for what concerns me right now with onboarding new people, like particularly in my company, is they're working out of their homes and how do they see the importance of building network and building the connections. So, does that concern you at all with with a hybrid workforce and that skill set, that art?
I have to say it does, particularly for the young people who are coming out of school who have not had that in-office experience. And So it's less about the location and more about the interactions.
True.
Because you learn so much from one being around people, observing people, being a part of the natural conversations, not just every time. People, when you go on Zoom, people are typically going for a very deliberate purpose, right? And it's usually a specific meeting. So I definitely believe, particularly for the younger demographic, that it's really important to have the human connection and interactions. Mm-hmm. It's also important for all of us, right? And I say that, in full disclosure, I'm an introvert, and so I quite enjoy my alone time.
I know, I'm with you on that. With you.
But I also, even for myself, understand the need for that interaction and so forth in person. There's nothing like it. Mm-hmm. And so I think you kind of need both. As it relates to networking, it's very important that people are deliberate and intentional about connecting with others. And so a lot of the work that I do, both in my writing and in my books, which The Guide to Strategic Networking and A Black Woman's Guide to Networking, and my soon-to-be, I'm not going to say the name just yet, because we haven't totally finalized it, but my third book, which Forbes is going to be publishing. But they all have that theme of building strong strategic networks. And so it's something that I encourage people to do. And now more than ever, it's important that we do that. So I think a hybrid model is fantastic, because I do think that it's important to support people in this new reality. People keep saying going back to normal. There is no such thing of going back. There's a new normal, right?
It's a new.
Right. It's not even a new normal, because it's right. It's just new. Yeah, I like that. New, because it's still evolving, and organizations really need to be responsive to what workers are looking for. And so I think the people who are inflexible and say, you will be in the office 100% of the time, I'm sure are going to lose a lot of great talent, because people just are looking for a different way of working.
It's true.
So.
Well, and I also believe it will get more out of them, right? I mean, when you really, we've kind of been forced into this space of well-being in the workplace, which is so beautiful.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, you speak to that too. It's it's first who you're being, so that what you do becomes secondary.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
I wonder for you how you've evolved in the space of being, right? Mm-hmm. Because I think, I'm an entrepreneur too, so it's like that uber doer.
Mm-hmm.
But there comes a point at which it can become a liability and a cost if you don't focus on who you're being.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a very important point. And so as I do work hard, yes, and I also, anyone who knows me or is close to me knows that I also prioritize my wellness.
Good. So I want to talk about that. So what does that look like for you?
So for me, it's daily. It's not just a grand gesture, although I do love going to the spa occasionally.
Yes.
but for me, it's important to really have time daily to meditate, to pray, and to just be alone with my thoughts. Mm-hmm. And I do that very early in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I also have a commitment to physical fitness that it's not for others, it's for me. I find that I just feel better. Mm-hmm. I operate better. And if I'm not taking care of my body and my mind, I'm just not the same. I'm not at my optimal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I start my days with my morning rituals, and both in terms of the practices that I have for my meditation, prayer, and walking. For me, I used to run back in the day, but
me too. It's overrated.
Occasionally, I jog, but really,
my knees are bad.
What I do consistently is walk,
yes.
And so I do that, and I also will take breaks, you know. So I'm very, very conscious of it. So every single day I think of, okay, what am I doing to try to be optimal health?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there are days that I fall off the apple cart, right, in terms of like today is
yes.
a very hectic day for me.
Yes.
But it can't be every day that you're running at 150%.
No.
Because it's just damaging to your health, and for me, I can't sustain it. So,
right.
So that's right. What I do. And it's something that I've been doing for a long time, and I'm pretty consistent with, and I pretty feel pretty good about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that, you know, neuroscience is backs well-being and taking breaks like every 90 minutes, even if it's for 2 minutes,
mm-hmm.
to kind of recalibrate and pause for new habits, new neurocircuitry to go mm-hmm. to the brain. You know, it's fabulous.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, so, I mean, I also coach, and what makes me sad a lot of the times is that the leaders, they don't schedule it. So I
right.
love hearing you say you schedule it, because if, you know, what doesn't get scheduled will not happen, right?
Exactly.
And so it's really prioritizing ourselves so that we can serve others at a higher level, but also model.
Right.
Right? You know, you kind of want someone looking at you saying, I could do that. I could be, not that, oh, I could never be her. You want, mm-hmm. we want to create a bunch of new leaders.
Right. Absolutely.
In this space.
Yeah.
You know, and especially now, because a lot of people are leaving the space due to stress, due to
right.
burnout, due to children at home, and they can't
yeah.
seem to figure it out.
Yeah.
So I'm concerned about a leadership gap, and I'm also concerned about the lack of mentorship and modeling that's happening
yeah.
for success and self-care. It's
right.
not one or the other. It's both
yeah.
end.
Yeah, I will say that I do think it's important to acknowledge that even that this privilege that supports
yeah.
that. And
no.
While I started out in poverty, I'm certainly not in that space now, and I am very aware that a lot of the practices and the support systems that I've put in place, whether it's the walking on the treadmill in the basement, well, you have to have the space and a basement to do that, right? And going to the spa occasionally. Those are all, you know, they're things that cost money.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have small children, which, you know, I have two daughters that are grown now, but it's really, really hard trying to do your full-time job, trying to take care of the children, trying to take care of yourself. So I want to acknowledge that I think that depending on where people are
mm-hmm.
in their life, they have to find a space, things that work for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I still think it's doable, because when I didn't have the resources that I have now, it's about trying to create those practices. So when I was in a two-room, you know, an apartment, it was going outside, because I didn't have
I didn't have
right. the comforts to go down to.
Right.
And also I did, whether it's jumping jacks or whatever. So I don't think that we should say, well, the person doesn't, you know, if I don't have the money, I can't be well. I think things that are free, like meditating, doesn't cost you anything.
This is what I love
right?
about meditation. And the mind. The mind
right.
is our greatest tool, and
right.
our breath.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. And I love the part about scheduling. I actually tell people, you can tell a person's values,
mm-hmm.
what a person values, by what's in their budget and what's on their calendar.
It's true.
And so if it's not budgeted
mm-hmm.
and it's not on your calendar
mm-hmm.
and you're saying it's really, really important,
mm-hmm.
you have to ask the question, is it really, have you really prioritized it?
Right.
Because if your wellness is really important,
mm-hmm.
then you need to prioritize it and build it into your schedule.
So true. So true. Right. Yes. And I am with you on that in terms of access, right? It's
mm-hmm.
like, who has access to
right.
this? But I don't know. For me, and, you know, training and kind of self-awareness like you, and mindfulness and this whole leadership space, you can have access to simple things mm-hmm. that can, you know, you can't change a habit without replacing it with a new habit. So instead of watching TV, spending 10 minutes alone or journaling or affirmations you know, just to get your psyche in a state of intentional focus, as you said earlier.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Because what we pay attention to grows.
Absolutely.
So I think that it's wide open. So talk to me about I leadership, because mm-hmm. I think right now.
Good morning.
Oh, you're so beautiful. Wow, I like that. Oh, man. Leadership must change. Would you agree right now?
Absolutely.
Okay. I'm just obsessed with this topic.
Yeah.
And you know, for you and I, modeling it and paying it forward. Mm-hmm. So if you were to say, Kip, here's what I see must change mm-hmm. about leadership, what mm-hmm. would you say is mission most critical?
I think the most important thing is I always go back to mindset.
Me too.
Right? Because if you don't have the right mindset, then you really need to do some work to get to the right mindset, because you can't help others if you're not in that space.
Right.
And the mindset that's needed for leadership is one that truly embraces diversity, equity, and inclusion. And I'm not just saying that because that's what I do. I do other things as well. But that really is critical. And I think you're in the business. I'm sure you're seeing the younger demographic. They don't want to work for companies that don't value DEI.
They won't.
Right.
And they won't work for a company that doesn't have a good culture and that doesn't take care, that doesn't support their development.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that means that leaders have to acknowledge that. Yeah, there's still people who are thinking, oh, this is a fad, or you know, and it's not. They you know, and I think it's a good thing, quite frankly. But to get back to the point, it absolutely has to be a shift in the leadership mindset, and then one that is backed by actions and strategy.
Thank you. Right, and not check the box.
Exactly.
So it
exactly.
has to create sustainability.
Exactly.
Right. Like, so as an example, DE&I, okay, let's go and make sure our workforce is diverse. It can't stop there.
Right.
Right. So say more, like, what? So what does a leader? Because I think some of this is, oh, okay, let's do a training. No, don't do a training if you'll take no action after the training.
Exactly. Right? It's so funny. I'm laughing because I just did a webinar with Professor Frank Dobbin from Harvard, and he is a sociologist and did a lot of work in terms of DEI. He has a new book out, and it's called Getting to Diversity. Mm. And it's funny because his premise is that diversity training doesn't work. So we had a really robust conversation around that, and I think he was a little surprised that I agreed with him, given mm-hmm. And what we both came to the conclusion on, and I was already doing this in my practice, is that you can't just do training and think you're going to accomplish anything. You have to approach it holistically. Mm-hmm. You have to work on the culture. Mm-hmm. You have to work on your leadership mindset mm-hmm. and everything that goes with that. And so there's actually a PDF on my website that's specifically for leaders around, you know, what it takes to have a good diversity and inclusion strategy. And it's, you know, starting with the leadership mindset. So you got to do the mindset, have to address the strategy, you have to have accountability, and yes, you can support that with building awareness in the organization, with DEI education, mm-hmm. but you can't just run off and do a training and think, oh, got that.
Right.
We're done.
Right.
Why isn't anything changing?
Exactly. Yeah. So just for the listeners, just share your website where they can find this PDF, because I want them to have access.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, so it's www.inspirationzonellc.com. That's inspirationzonellc.com. And if you go to the Get Inspired section of the website, there's a tab for that, and it's in the articles section. And so And there are lots of other articles on there as well.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. So what else? Is there anything else about leader shifting? And I love what you're saying. Is there anything else that you think is needs to be in this space?
Yeah, I think this whole, reset in terms of, and it's related to leadership mindset, of really getting to know people.
Mm-hmm. The human side.
In a deeper way.
Yes.
And so this notion that, you know, well, work is work and home is home or what have you, I think that's definitely, especially with the pandemic, has shifted even more. But I think what people are realizing is that it's tough to sustain DEI or meaningful relationships or support your employees if you don't know them.
So true. So, you can't have a one-on-one that's just like, did you do your job?
Right.
Where are your numbers?
Right. People want to know that you care about them.
It's so true. Right? The empathy, the compassion.
Exactly.
Well, and that leads to self-awareness. Yeah. Exactly. And so tell me, Juliet, from your opinion, why are people so afraid to become more self-aware?
I think it is, and I think it's fair, right?
Fear.
There is fear, and I think also there's been a fair amount of what I call blame and shame, and I think as a result of that, people are less willing to speak up or to be transparent because they're afraid that they're going to be demonized or dismissed or what have you. And I think
there's a self-protect bubble.
Yeah, yeah. So we have to create a space where people can have candid conversations and do it in a way that is without judgment.
Exactly.
And so that's what I try to do in my work, and it's what I encourage my clients to do, because you're not going to get to a place of trust.
Right.
If you're not having the real conversations,
right,
and you're not going to have the real conversations if you don't feel psychologically safe.
I thank you. I feel the same way, and I think developing self-awareness actually is the greatest pathway to freedom. You know, like you said in the beginning, it's hard. Well, it's hard because our mind thinks it's hard because of old beliefs we have been conditioned into. But once you understand, a belief is just a negative thought that you repeat.
Right.
That forms from an experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
But those can shift.
Yeah. But we're also fearful because we don't know people. So the only frame that we have is what, for a lot of people, is what they see in the news or what they've heard somebody else say. And so this whole breaking down of the walls to get to better know people, I think is really, really important. And especially right now, we're such a polarized society. Mm-hmm. And so it really takes intentionality to get to that place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. What do you wish, well, first of all, what message would you give to your younger self?
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. What message would I give to my younger self? You know, it's kind of funny. I don't know that it would change. It would be dream big. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the message that my mother gave me,
so cool,
is one that I internalized. And so I think I would stay with that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, and that dream is whatever you choose for it to be.
Right.
You know, this notion, I think sometimes people feel they have to fit a certain mold, or success is defined by how others define it. And I think you have to define that success for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, your internal why, right?
What is it that is your definition of success, not somebody else's?
Right, right. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. And what if there's anything, you know, that you say, gosh, I kind of wish Kip had asked me this, because this is so organic, as you can see. But, you know, but I've loved it. I've loved our conversation. I could go so many directions. But, you know, is there anything that's on your mind you know, that's front and center, that is just, you just feel really passionate about right now? And
yeah, I think for me, it's really about inspiring the next generation.
I agree.
You know, I think that so many of our, the younger generation are being dismissed or misunderstood or what have you. And to be candid, I had to go through my own journey on this because even with my own children, you know, I grew up very differently from how they have grown up. And so, you know, I quite frankly had some battles, you know. Mm. It's like, I'm going to do things my way. And after all, I said, wait, you might want to just pay attention here. And is there something here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Listen.
Mm-hmm.
And resist that urge to have to be right.
To be right. Yes.
And in doing that, I've learned so much from my daughters and from others who are, they're just so visionary and just, I think, they're very clear about their values and
so true.
What's important to them.
Yeah.
And I think that we all could learn from that. And I think that we can also create better bridges and more connections
mm-hmm.
so that we are inspiring and supporting
their leadership.
Their leadership, absolutely.
Right? See it like, gosh, let me step to the side here a little bit and allow you... younger generation to be heard and seen and validated, right?
Absolutely.
There's so much creativity.
Oh, absolutely. And it's not just because we typically go to technology, which is absolutely true
mm-hmm.
because they're digital natives and we're digital immigrants. And it's beyond technology. It's their way of thinking
mm-hmm.
and it's also their way of operating in ways that are true to who they are. And I think we could all learn from that.
Right. Yeah. There's a deeper level of kind of authenticity and connection of who I am.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And sometimes that's hard. I mean, I think sometimes that's hard for, you know, some people that are older managers to deal with. They don't know how to deal. But
right.
I think embracing and surrendering and naming it and is the way to go.
Yeah, it's very, very different from how we were brought up, right? And how, if you think about the workplace today versus the workplace years ago, and they were just, you just knew what the expectations were, and most people, because I can't say that I strive to get in the box many times. I was jumping out of the box.
Yes.
But most people try to fit into the box.
I know.
And a lot of our young people are saying, you know what? I'm not even going to step foot in that box. So,
right. So I'm going to live. I'm going to draw outside of the lines and be better for it.
Right.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Create some ripples.
Create a new path. Right.
Yes. Well, Juliet, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much. And I'm excited
for
your next book.
Thank you, Kip.
I can't wait.
I'm excited, too.
We invite you to click subscribe and listen to our other walks. You can also visit HollisterGroup.com, where there is free culture resources, including guided meditations, a blog of insights, and professional training and enrichment programs. The music and song you heard during this podcast, Inner Sovereignty, was performed by Chad Hollister and written by Kip Hollister and Chad Hollister. Thank you for taking a walk.
Inside is the doorway out. Inside is the doorway to my inner sovereignty, where I'm free to be the energy of me. My inner sovereignty, inner sovereignty, where I'm free to be the energy of me. My inner sovereignty, my inner sovereignty.